go.
The best way to start a podcast is for two married guys to talk about divorce. Right?
Yeah, we were.
This is what was just happening for all the listeners prior to pressing record. Brad and I were discussing the amount of weddings we've been to. Brad, of course, jet setting all around the world for his famous friends. And I asked the question, I posed the question, how many of these couples are still married?
Right.
And it's alarmingly small.
I mean, I think the ones that I'm not surprised, right? Like there was, I don't think there was any surprises for me. And
You knew at the wedding?
No, not at the wedding, but it wasn't a surprise. It was, you know, there were weddings that probably were not ideal, or maybe just people who, you know, tended to get distracted.
Was there? Oh, get distracted. I know what that
means. I don't mean cheat. I just mean like, you know, they had shown in the past prior to making it legal that maybe, you know, settling down was not totally for them.
Yeah. There's a lot of reasons, right? Have you ever been the one where you're like, oh man, look at this couple. They're so in love. This is serendipitous that they've met each other. I'm so happy I'm here. And then like 9 months later, no. You're like, oh no, they're done.
No, one of them, the one who I was talking about with the bachelor party, which we won't name, but that one didn't last very long. That was, that didn't last long, unfortunately.
I recently just heard of something that kind of blew my mind. You know, I'm a child of divorce. Mm-hmm. Wait, are you?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you too. You know, as children of divorce and like, you know, there's seemingly only a couple different ways to operate it, you know, like, you know, one person lives in the house, one lives somewhere else, like dual custody, whatever. And, or, you know, however you have it arranged. But I just heard about a situation recently where a divorced couple has the house, the kids stay in the house permanently, and they each have different places and only live in the house half the week.
They show up?
Yeah. So it's like the kid's house almost, and they get like a different parent for like half the week. Which like for the sake of the kid,
yeah, if you can afford
smart.
It.
But yeah, then I'm like, wait, what's the caveat to this?
Oh,
it's so
God.
Smart. Why doesn't everyone do that? I'm like, oh, that means you have to pay for three places rather than two.
Right. You gotta be you gotta have the money.
So I guess that's the rich option.
No, but you know, I have to say, a very, very, very close friend of mine, I would dare say one of my best friends, he got divorced. He had two kids who were still, you know, young at the time. And he moved into a house across the street.
Oh, wow. Creepy.
Yeah. Like, I mean, a few houses down.
Right.
But, they had enough room for the kids. So the kids basically had bedrooms at both houses.
And, I mean, that's good for the kids, I guess. But then it's like, you know, 6 months passes, someone decides to start dating.
Well, that's the thing. He moved into the house with his new girl.
Lover.
Yes. Who became his wife. Very.
Maybe. You know what? As I noted in the beginning of this, maybe two, you know, married guys on a podcast shouldn't be talking about divorce as much.
Probably
let's,
not.
Let's not put it out in the world too much. It's not like. It's not like you and I are totally put together puzzles here, you know?
Maybe, yeah, it's either a sign of security that we both have very secure relationships.
Or wild insecurity. Yeah.
Or that we're fucking completely delusional.
Like, oh my God, she's seen through all the gaps. Now I have to come up with a plan. I don't know. Oh, maybe. God. All right, well, let's change the course of this with... Are we becoming a ska program?
Wow, two in a row.
And Mike Park only about a month ago.
Yeah.
We had Mike Park, you know, literally owner of Asian Man Records. We had Joe Gittleman of the Mighty Mighty Bosstones, you know, right. Huge influence in ska.
Oh,
we have the Mighty Catbite on this episode. Friend of the program, Jeff Rosenstock is...
Oh, yeah.
You know, arguably the king of ska. at this point. You know, I mean, he's
at least around these parts.
Listen, if anyone's, you know, unabashedly, you know, helping with some of the revival, it's that guy. So here's what I ask is, like, I've never would have said, like, oh yeah, I'm a ska fan. Maybe I'm a ska fan. I think I am. And I think we talked about it in this interview. Maybe one of the things that's warming me up to it is, you know, I was doing research for this interview and some of the other ones, and I really do notice this kind of like a little extra sense of community among the ska people. You know, it's like they're like the subgenre of a subgenre, and they kind of, you know, you know, except of what they mentioned with the, you know, delineation between traditional ska and what's, you know, third wave, second wave, you know, ska or whatever that is. It seems like when you come into this world, there's sort of open arms, you know, and a unjudgmental attitude. And
there should be, because that. I mean, they need to, you know, they need to band together. Let's face it. Like, ska has taken some hits, and, you know, it's kind of ridiculous, because the truth is, like, yeah, it's I like ska, but I don't think you know, you said you were a ska fan, but you don't have to call yourself a ska fan. It's like, that's because it's so controversial that you either have to be a ska fan or a ska hater. Like, you know what
right.
I mean?
You can't
like,
just
that's
be
how
like
it's been. Yeah. Traditionally, that's how it's been, is everybody's felt like they had to take a side. But dude, it's just like, you wouldn't say that about like rock and roll. Yeah. Or pop.
It's a
you?
Good point. It is a good point. It's kind of like a line in the sand sort of thing.
Yeah, it has been. And I think what this interview talks about is that it's finally being accepted as music and just another form of music. And you don't have to be a hater or a lover to enjoy ska.
So normalize ska.
Yes.
Well, this was a fun interview. I can't say I've been on to Catbite for like many years. I think I even missed, you know, when they were on the first record, but you know, when the lead up to this one's been coming and I've kind of been checking them out, and every song each step of the way is great. You know, I thought I was just going to hear this kind of fun, you know, fun loving ska stuff. That's sort of what it was presented as. But once you dig into the tunes, there's a lot of meat to it. There's a lot of depth in the music. Britt has a really interesting voice and could do a lot of different things with it. I mean, as she explained in the interview with her training and background, you know, makes sense. It's kind of like the, you know, like the drummer from Weezer thing. It's like, you know, that guy can do a lot more than that.
Right.
You know, but you put him in this genre, it just shines so brightly, you know, and I feel like Britt's onto some cool stuff, and now I'm really excited. I think found a great new band for me from Philly to go have a great time to, and we're playing shows together, and I'm really excited about the band Catbite.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So why don't we listen to the interview with Tim and Britt? It's going on track. Can I tell you something I was thinking about right before we got in this interview?
Yes.
I was thinking, sometimes I think about all the qualifications you need for like public office, or the things that like people require, you know, they want you to like go to college or have military service or some background in civil service or something. And I'm always wondering when I see a president, I'm like, do you know how to make a box of Kraft mac and cheese? Have you lived like one of us? And I was just doing the laundry at the house and thinking about, you know, all my days at the laundromat. Mm-hmm. And how there should be new requirements for the presidency. And some of them should be, you need to be able to handle yourself at a laundromat.
Right.
You need to be able to make a box of powdered mac and cheese and make it good.
Yeah, it can be,
runny.
Or like super powdery.
Yeah.
That's the worst one.
A lot of mistakes to be made there. Mm-hmm. So I want to see someone who's obviously done it a couple dozen times. And then what's some more criteria? Oh, you had to have to ride a public bus to work at least once. Oh.
At least once. Or subway.
Yeah.
Bus preferred.
Yeah.
Definitely right. Bus preferred though. Yeah.
Am I missing anything? What would be more good criteria in that?
Maybe make a bag of popcorn.
Yeah, that's a huge one. The microwave.
Yeah, microwave popcorn.
Without setting off the fire alarm.
Don't burn it.
And there has to be less than 30 kernels left in the bag. So you can't undercook it. Yeah, exactly. You have to split the difference and like between on fire and 30 kernels left. And well, if you can meet
What's your method? Do you go in the middle and kind of puff the bag up a little bit?
I'm just standing right next to it the whole time, like with my ear pressed against the microwave, like kind of getting probably a little bit of cancer, but it's worth it in the long run. And like doing the exact like stopwatch, like making sure it's like at least 4 seconds or 5 seconds in between pops.
I don't think the young generation knows they're getting cancer from microwaves anymore.
That's fine.
My mom used to not even like sit in a room with one if it was on. Now I don't even think people know anymore.
Yeah.
Well, everything can give you cancer at this point. So
it's fine.
That's true. Just walking outside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you into my new criteria here? What do you think?
I'm 100% supportive of that.
Yeah. I think I would trust the president more if they could pass all of these things.
Yeah.
Am I being a reverse elitist in the way that, like, you know, if someone grew up rich or suburban or even rural, they would have never had to take public transit. Actually, they didn't even have public transit.
Right.
So maybe I got to take that one out.
That's like a bonus. Or maybe they should be able to like figure it out.
If they can't do that, if they've never ridden public trans, they have to know how to change their own oil.
There we go. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or at least a tire.
Yeah, a tire. Yes.
Yeah. Let's do that.
That's the caveat.
Oh yeah, that's a good.
Can you change? You can probably change a tire, Brad, even though you don't own a car anymore.
Oh yeah. I mean, back in the day when I had cars, I did everything. Dude, I changed the starter motor in our band van one time, like in the dark on Houston Street. In the dark, I did it in the dark, inside the van, because it was a Dodge van that you could pull the cover off from the inside and get at it from the inside.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
We, one quick van story in that regard. I have to give my friend Dave Parker some credit. No one knows his name's Dave. He is only Parker. He's the bass player in my old band. So we were driving to a show in upstate New York, I think like Rochester. My singer was driving and a tire just blew out. Not a flat, just a straight blowout.
Yeah.
And it bottomed to the road so hard that the gas tank had become disconnected from the muffler system. The muffler was like wrapped around the axle a couple times, like the end of the muffler. Like, this is like really serious undercarriage stuff going on. We were traveling with some friends called Scream Hello. They brought us the rest of the way. We left the van in a garage, but we had no idea, not even a garage, a parking lot, because it's still very, very, very creepily drove to a parking lot. We changed the tire, but then, you know, the whole undercarriage is messed up. We're like, let's go play the show. We show up, set up, and it's a house show in like a living room somewhere. You know, after all this, we show up, put the gear, about to start like the first song, like 30 seconds, and the landlord walks in. He's like, what the fuck is going on here? Show's over.
Fuck.
So, So loaded out back in our friend's van. We were just using their stuff. They drive us back, and here's where Parker came in. He just went to like a Pilot and bought some weird brackets, some weird glues, and then just put himself under there for about 25 minutes and rigged this bizarre set of contraptions that was going to make the van at least maybe get us home.
What?
So he unraveled it, like unraveled the muffler from the frame, like used, you know, things you're not supposed to, like adhesives you shouldn't use around gasoline.
Flammable, dude.
Like pretty bad stuff going on. We were driving like 45 miles an hour, stopping every 20 minutes to make sure like we weren't going to blow up. But made it back. God.
That shit makes me so nervous. Holy shit. I hate van issues.
None of which are gonna. If something happens in cat bite van related, who's the go to?
Definitely not me.
I mean, I've always, like, I'm always the driver, and like in all my other bands, I've always been the van owner and the driver.
Oh, okay.
But I fucking hate cars, and like I don't know shit about that. I can change a tire, I can change the oil, and that's it. But like I've had a tire blow on us in the middle of the Florida Turnpike, like on the way from fucking Miami to Gainesville once. It's fucking terrifying. But like, I don't know. I'll just AAA will take care of it.
Well, I mean, I think more importantly in a band, the framework, the person who can get the big, what is it? The 4 out of 4. If you can keep a valid license, registration, inspection, and insurance, you are a very valuable member of the band right off the bat there, you know?
That's true.
That's me. That was me.
Like, you could get an oil change at the gas station. Someone's got to know how to get that shit, you know?
Yeah.
Well, good for you, Tim.
Thank you.
You could be
so stressful. I hated it, but it's fine.
You passed Benny's prereq for president.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
I make really good mac and cheese, by the way, too. So,
ooh.
Yeah.
Do you have any tricks?
I mean, it depends, like, if I'm doing from scratch or if I'm doing box mac, instead of milk, I'll add Greek yogurt.
Wow.
Yeah, like, unflavored, like, just plain Greek yogurt.
Which probably makes it so creamy.
It makes it so creamy, yeah.
Wow. That's almost like a take on Alfredo.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that, okay.
It just really brings a dollar box of mac and cheese.
And you make a homemade mac and cheese, too.
Yeah, I mean, that's just a fuck ton of just cheese and butter and everything that's in the fridge.
Tim, you're impressing me.
Thanks. I'm Italian. So yeah.
Oh, I'm Italian. I can just do this.
A little this, a little that, yeah.
So, you know, in the past, however long we've been doing this again, I don't know, like 16 months or 18 months, I've heard a lot of crazy COVID stories about what bands have been doing and how they use the time. Yours is particularly unique. It had a lot more than even others. You somehow had tickets for a tour, got Davey Warsop involved, and a dog attack.
Yeah. It's got so many layers.
So can you run down to me like what happened there? It's kind of an epic tale what you all pulled off with this record.
I guess we'll start with the fact that I've been following Davey's work forever, and like he's always been someone I wanted to produce like music of ours. And so we'd met him like in person when he was on tour with the Interrupters with his old band or with his band Sharp Shock, and like really hit it off. And he was like, yeah, I definitely want to produce you. And that was a little bit before the pandemic. And so we were 2 years old of a band at this point, and like we were going to really start touring a lot in 2020, and then shit went with the pandemic.
Haywire.
Yeah.
And oh, okay.
So, I don't know if you noticed there's pandemic, but
did you have many tours booked?
A decent amount, a lot, just like a lot of like East Coast and like Midwest and shit like that. But like we were going to be way more active than we had been for the past 2 years. Mm-hmm. But one of those was a West Coast and a Japan tour.
Oh, shit.
And so we already had the tickets to LA for September of 2020. Then the pandemic hit, and we're like, shit. And then like a couple weeks go by of us like holding out, seeing if like it might still happen. And then we're like, it's definitely not going to happen. And we just had the idea that like, we weren't planning on it at all, but we were just like, why don't we just use those flights to LA and write and record a record and go out to LA and record it with Davey. And then we agreed to do that with Davey, and everyone was all stoked. And then we realized,
but like, you agreed to do that without songs?
Without songs, yeah. we had no new songs. Like we at this point we had 7 original songs and 1 cover on our first record.
Right.
And that, like, we were playing like, you know, 30-minute sets with like 3 covers and
yeah, well we had one new song that we did for the Scoggins.
Well, no, we wrote that after this, I think. I don't know. But anyways, yeah, we had like no new songs really. And so we're like, September's long enough time to write a record. It was like June at this point.
Okay.
And we're like, yeah, that's like, we can do this. And then like, it's quickly approaching and we're like writing shit like crazy. But it was like a month out before we were supposed to go to LA. And we had like 8 songs, kind of like bare bones of songs.
Okay.
And then one day we get a text from our bass player like, hey, I swear I'm not making this up. I'm so sorry. I might have broken my hand or my arm. And we're like, oh shit, what the fuck, dude? And it turns out like he's a dog daycare guy and he broke up a dog fight and his arm got in the middle of it.
No.
And so just completely just a bulldog just bit through his entire arm.
Holy shit.
Broke his arm in 2 spots and had to get surgery and like a plate put in.
Yeah. Like his forearm?
Yeah, his right forearm.
A fucking bulldog broke his bone.
Yeah.
Isn't that wild?
That is extremely wild. I don't even mean to chuckle, but it's just
If I had heard that, I would think that was like kind of a, you know, an old wives' tale or something.
Yeah.
A bulldogs can bite right through your arm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like insane.
If Bulldog Broke My Bones is in a song in the next record, Britt, come on.
It's like, and it's like our name is like Cat Bite and it's like a dog bite.
Yes. Yes.
I was like, I think my first thing was like, way to go off brand, dude. And like, and then I'm like, oh, that was probably mean. But no, he's still fine.
It's still in the when animals attack genre. It's pretty good. Pretty close.
But, nice. But yeah, that actually definitely saved us because we were able to postpone everything and switch.
Okay.
So we pushed everything back to like November to fly it to LA. Yeah,
you had no intention of pushing back before You were just going to try to squeeze it in somehow.
Yeah. I mean, we were like bust. I mean, we probably would have been able to do it because we were just like practice. We didn't practice any of the new songs for a while because of the stay at home order.
Right.
And then like, by like mid-July, that's when like basically like the band and everyone's like partners, that was like basically our pod. And like we didn't see anyone else outside of, because we're all like best friends and live near each other and stuff. So like we would just practice like all these new songs like once a week. And then we were just going to do it more frequently because we rehearsed at our drummer Chris's basement. So it's like we just practice at his house.
And everyone's in Philly?
Yeah. Cool. We all live like within like 5 blocks of each other.
Oh, easy.
Pretty
That's
sick.
Great. Yeah.
But we pushed everything to November. It was going to be 10 days instead of 14 days, which was a little harder. But we flew out to LA, started tracking, and then Davey's girlfriend got sick, and we all thought that she had COVID, and then we had to stop production for about 2.5 days when we were in LA. And we were basically just like quarantined in like a tiny 1-bedroom Airbnb.
Oh man. Yeah. And,
but then we heard
she
almost
ended up being okay.
Yeah. So she was fine. And then we were able to resume it. And
but we didn't get to finish recording there.
So I mean, at that point, did you think you were like going to have to do like the 10-day, 2-week quarantine in that room and stop recording and all that?
We were just waiting to hear back like what her, and like Davey's results were.
Yeah.
Cause we were like, I don't think it's like the way he was saying it. Like it didn't really seem like it was quarantine, but it was all or like,
no,
she
but
had
then
COVID.
She, but then he was like, she had a really terrible fever.
Yeah.
So we were like at first thinking like, oh, it's, you know, it's probably not. But then as it like it did progress like pretty badly for her.
Yeah. And by last July, no one knows what the fuck is like really going on yet.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Like, so we were like, oh, fuck, we're going to have to cancel this whole thing.
And be like, all and all of us have days. COVID in L.A.
Yeah.
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 A tiny little one bedroom.
Can't even leave the goddamn.
Yeah. Yeah. It looked like a scene from fucking Trainspotting in there.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, but it was all good, and we finished up recording like 90% of the record there, and then like we got back to Philly, and then right when we got back to Philly, shit, like this was like mid-November, and shit got
the
like
second lockdown
happened, right. And so we couldn't even finish the record because we have a studio here in Philly that we're good friends with, and we were gonna just like finish up. It was like backup vocals and like couple guitar parts and. Like keyboard, and that was like it was basically like we needed like two more days of recording. I think we did like one and a half to finish it, but we ended up having to push that all the way until like January because of the next lockdown. So we like got back and we were all motivated to like finish this record, and we couldn't fucking do shit.
Yeah,
and but yeah, we finished the record like first week of January, I guess. And also like, so yeah, like this is all these songs we've never played live. So it was like, meanwhile, we're just like all in our head. Like, are these songs like cool? Like we haven't been able to, cause like, you know, you record a record, like you start playing songs and then you gauge the crowd's reaction.
Yeah,
and it's like, this works, this doesn't. And so we just wrote like 10 songs or 9 songs in a cover. And it's like, who knows what the fuck people are going to think about this. Cause like, no one's ever heard them. So we're just like
so much better. Like I hear that and I'm like, yo, that's the way like everyone should write records. Like,
yeah. I mean, it turned out great. But we were so fucking nervous.
I was really, really anxious about it, about dropping it and everyone hating it.
Yeah.
Were you? Was it just that lack of feedback in the process made you more nervous, you think?
Yeah. Cause like no one had heard of these songs except for us and Davey. And like,
yeah, we were like, we think it's good, but
right?
Yeah.
You never know. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But also like, we were like barely a band at all when we recorded our first record.
Sure.
And like, weren't expecting anything. And then it like, we released it and then just like a lot of people latched onto it really quickly and it like did really well. And we're like, oh shit. So now we have to like, this is our second record. We can't like
sophomore flop.
Yeah. We have to beat that. And that was like, so like, you know, low pressure. Now it's like super fucking high pressure.
Yeah, the sophomore slump is horrifying. Yeah.
Yeah. So we were all just like losing our minds about it. Like every song we would write, like just like reworked it a million fucking times.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think it turned out good.
Yeah, no, it's great. And it's funny when you explain it because, you know, because of the time frame and the schedule and everything that you had to do to get it done, you almost followed like a major label pre-production outline that takes 6 months, you know, where you sift through your songs over and over. Like, do you think that being able to kind of go through it so many times with a fine-tooth comb has kind of helped develop it in a certain way, or at a certain point where you just like, you know, you can't do anything else to this, it's done?
I mean, I think it was helpful that like we were able to attack it over and over again, but like had no outside like feedback because like it kept it cat bite.
Yeah.
Right, right.
Like I feel like playing the songs out would have maybe like influenced the direction, and it might have been, I don't know, a little less original on our own parts. Like we might start conforming to other things that like other bands do, and like we try and be like, you know, different with this record and just with the band in general.
Yeah.
And like, and I think it just kept it like purely artist intent.
Yeah.
And it like, so yeah, I mean, it definitely
was helpful and like very different from, you know, recording the first record versus this one. Like we were definitely like looking for, you know, like listening back and like, you know, pinpointing things that we were like, no, this needs to change. And like, I think that definitely helped us like with Nice One, this is like the definite cat bite sound. Whereas on the first album, it was like there, but it wasn't like polished. And this is like, that sound polish. And yeah. so I'm super happy with it. And yeah, I think it was a great thing that we were able to do that.
That's awesome.
Plus Davey was just a fucking,
oh my gosh,
he's such a beast. Like,
he's a great songwriter.
He's such, yeah.
So
yeah,
he had a lot of good input in songwriting as well.
I mean, he mostly helped us with like arrangements. He kind of just like he wasn't really doing arrangements or doing stuff for us. He just kind of like talked us through what we were like kind of already thinking and like kind of like kept us like on track. Like we would send him demos and be like, yeah, I like that. And I'd be like, what about this? What if I switch this and this around? He'd be like, eh, or he would like, you know, say that would be a good idea.
That's cool.
It was just like cool to have him, especially because like I'm a big fan of like working with a producer that's like outside of your specific genre.
Sure.
Like I've been a fan of like his stuff, especially like with his old band Beat Union and Suedehead.
Yeah.
Like, that was like the shit that drew me to him.
Beat Union was fucking great.
Yeah. And like listening to that, I'm like, this is what I want our record to sound like. Hmm. But like Catboy doing it, like Scott, like, I don't know. I just wanted to be like different and like have this dude who writes like poppy punk songs and like mod shit. Like I want him to be kind of like helping us, guiding us in a way that, you know, it will make the end product more like accessible to people outside of just ska, because I mean, we listen to way more ska. We just call ourselves a ska band, but like,
right.
You know, we're like all like, you know, we listen to literally everything and want to play shows with bands that are literally all over the spectrum. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, I mean, you mentioned it going into this, you know, developing the Catbite sound. And when I, you know, sort of see, the inception of the band, I am curious how you started going in that way. So Britt, you moved to Philly from Fort Lauderdale and had what, like a jazz background?
Yeah. So I'm originally from Fort Lauderdale. I was going to school in Orlando, just at like a state college, and I was studying music performance. And I was studying classical, which was awful. I mean, it wasn't, it just wasn't for me. I had a teacher once when I did like a performance in class. And like the first thing she asked me was like, are you happy? Like when you sing these songs? And I was like, well, yeah, yeah. And she's like, well, you just look like you're in so much pain.
Oh,
I was like, oh God. Okay. So
well,
like,
that's classical, encouraging.
Yeah. Classical was not it for me, but I started, there was an adjunct teacher that, started teaching half hour lessons, for jazz. So I latched on to her. And then she was like, well, yeah, you're really good at this. You should continue studying. They just didn't offer a program in jazz there. So I ended up coming to Philly.
Oh, cool.
And I got my bachelor's in jazz voice performance here. But yeah, I have a, you know, classical and jazz, you know, background, I guess.
That's awesome. What kind of stuff in the jazz realm do you like vocally? Is there anybody in that world that you feed off of at all?
Yeah, I mean, I really, really love like the old, like jazz singers, and like standards are like my favorite like thing to perform for jazz. So people like Sarah Vaughan, and obviously Ella Fitzgerald, Blossom Dearie is one of my favorites. Chet Baker, who else did I think of? Oh, Billie Holiday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And were you into the scene and, you know, like punk, ska, like alternative stuff, you know, prior to coming to Philly, or?
Yeah. I mean, I was into punk. But I like growing up in Fort Lauderdale, at least like for me, it was, I know there's like a ska scene down there, but I wasn't involved in that.
Right.
And like just the people that were around me were more like pop, you know, like pop, top 40 kind of people.
Right,
so that's
right.
Like, that's kind of the stuff I like grew up listening to, but my dad is like the one who got me into music. And like, so he would always listen to like soul and like, you know, Spanish music. And, so I got a lot of that too, like growing up. But yeah, I wasn't into ska really. I knew obviously like the you know, the big name bands, like,
sure, yeah,
you know, No Doubt and, you know, Les and Jake, whatever. But I very much was like that person who thought ska was corny because people were like, ska's corny.
Right.
Like,
right.
Yeah, yeah, like, yeah. 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 Uh-huh. You're right. But when I, the first show, when I moved to Philly, the first show that I actually, went to was Tim's old band, Snails.
Okay.
And I was like, holy shit. Yeah. His old ska band. And I was like, damn, like they're so awesome. And it was like such a great show. And like, there was, everybody was dancing and like having a good ass fucking time. And I was like, holy shit. Like, what is this? Yeah. So yeah.
That's how you got into ska.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. How do you, I mean, is there, when you listen to other ska bands, are there times when you're like, oh, I can do something different because, you know, I had that kind of training or came from a different background. You said your dad is Peruvian, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, do you think it's kind of a unique blend going into the ska world? Do you think, because of your background and your training, you're able to sort of bring something different over into that fold?
I mean, yeah, definitely. Maybe not like, I mean, I don't like go in, you know, when I'm writing music thinking like I'm going to specifically write it like as a jazz song or as like a pop song. I think that just is like what I don't know, what is just like in me naturally. But I think it's cool because, like, you know, now I know, like, ska music. I know, like, traditional Jamaican ska. And, like, so I know that stuff, but I can pull from, like, the stuff that I also know, like, jazz and, you know, R&B and soul. And I think it's, like, it melts really nicely with ska, I feel like.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting because even when I was listening to the record, you know, the last couple, you know, week or two since it's been around. I did notice there's a couple songs where, you know, if I just let myself go and forget I'm listening to a quote unquote ska band, I sort of feel like I'm a little more in the 50s or 60s. Like,
yeah,
it's kind of giving me at times a little more of like a doo-wop vibe.
Yeah, I love doo-wop.
You know, and stuff. Actually, I heard a bunch of parts where I'm like, yo, Catbite could definitely have backup singers on stage.
Yeah.
I don't know if we talked about that. That would be cool.
That would be sick.
I mean, we're all about harmonies and shit. Like, that's a huge thing with writing our songs.
So
one day.
So how's it go from A to B? You're at a Snail show. You know, and then, you know, and now we are where we are. Like, how did you two actually meet and start doing the band?
So Tim and I ended up we worked together at a cookie delivery place, Insomnia Cookies.
Oh yeah, I know that place.
Yeah, she started working there. She was my boss.
Yes.
my manager.
Yeah, I was the shift leader, and he was.
Oh, you were Insomnia Cookies. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I was the head bitch in charge. So that's how we met.
And I was like, come to my show.
Yeah. Like, yo, I got this demo.
Like, come see my ska band on South Philly.
That's awesome. Yeah. Where was the show at?
I think it was the Connie's. Or no.
No, it was the place that burned down.
Oh, place next to Connie's.
Yeah.
Whatever the fuck it was.
Started with a T?
No. Terry's Bar.
Terry's.
Okay. Yeah. And you brought a date.
Yeah, I brought a date. Like, I didn't even like Tim at that. Well, he had a girlfriend at the time.
Oh, scandalous.
I was into somebody else. So
my other coworker.
Yes.
Well, I didn't know anybody. This is literally, I moved to Philly.
Yeah, your scene was via Insomniac Cookies. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, I moved to Philly and literally got a job within 2 weeks. And then I was like, that's everybody I know here in Philly.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
yeah. But then.
So you went to the show. So you said, here's my demo. Come to my ska show.
Yeah.
And then what happened after that?
She left Insomniac Cookies, and then we started like dating a couple like that summer.
Okay.
So and we were just like together. So I was like in the Snails. That was like my band from like high school and shit. And it was like a traditional like ska band, whatever. And I was in that band for like about 9 years. And we like started to kind of drift away from ska, and I was kind of bummed about it because like I liked the ska scene.
Mm-hmm.
It was just so much fun, and we were like kind of leaning towards being like garagey rock, like kind of just the rest of the band was just trying to like fit in with the Philly scene,
right?
Which is like very like
they called it basement soul.
Yeah, it's like the whole like Johnny Brenda's like
some mom jeans and oversized sweaters and
and
getting a fuzz pedal.
And that's exactly what happened in the band. Uh-huh. And I was like, so I like finally got up the courage to leave the band, and then the band broke up like a couple months later, but. Because I was like, I was just
was
like
the goddamn glue of that band.
Yeah, I was just like the rhythm guitar player, and I didn't have any like creative control really. I was just like told what to do because they're all like really great musicians, and I was just like holding it down on rhythm guitar. But like I was, you know, the manager, the driver, the van owner,
and like, was the only one that could like actually have conversations with people.
Weirdos too.
We would play the show, and they would just sit in the van when the other bands were playing, and I'm like, you know, having fun, like talking to the other bands. And then it's like, I just got so sick of like coming across as like that douchebag band. And
no,
like,
I know. You seem like a sweet guy. So I can understand the position you're in. I've been in that position where I'm like, you guys fucking kidding me? I have to sit. I have to watch six bands for the entire show because all of you guys, I'm like, this isn't cool.
Yeah.
I know that feeling.
a couple months after I left that band, like there was just this weird void where I'm like, cause I was like in this power pop band at the time. And it was like we were just having fun, like doing local shows and like, it wasn't like anything serious, but like that wasn't like filling, you know, that's what I want to do is like play music and tour. And this is what I've always wanted to do. And Britt and I were just like, let's start a band. Mm-hmm. Cause like, obviously she's like the best singer I know. And like, I know the ska scene. I was like, let's just start a ska band. And this was like 2018, and my one coworker, our original bass player, Johnny, he just left a similar situation where he was in this punk band for years and they broke up. It was bad terms. And he was like, now what? And he's like really into like two-tone and shit like that, and great bass player. And so the three of us just like, we just started like a group chat and like sending songs to each other. Like, let's cover this Selector song, or like, let's do a ska version of this Exploding Heart song, or like just like shit like that. And like just brainstorming ideas. And we just, eventually I just was like, fuck it, I'm gonna book studio time. we didn't even have like a drummer. The drummer who we wanted, who's our drummer now, is like our best friend, Chris. And he's like the best fucking drummer. Like, he's amazing. He's like jazz trained, but he's just like, he's been in hardcore bands.
Yeah. He seems super versatile.
Yeah. And like, I've played with him for years. And we told him about the studio time. We're like, hey, so we booked studio time to like record. We were like gonna do like two covers and an original, and just like record it in like a day. And he's like, oh, okay, fine. And just like learn the songs like in the studio, and we just like hashed them out real quick.
Nice.
And super hungover too.
Yeah. The day before, we were in Virginia, all of us, at Supernova Ska Festival, which is like this big ska, like 3-day ska festival.
Nice.
And like, we pretty much like drunkenly convinced him to do this, and then he did it. And like, we just like started releasing the songs. And then also I was like, also at the same time, I booked a show for us. And like, it was like,
wait, this is a theme at Catbite. Just set the goal before.
That's
before
we have anything.
I like this. It's ambitious. Good for you.
And I was
who's
like,
got time to win?
It was like maybe 6 weeks away at this point. I'm like, oh, Chris, by the way, I booked a show. It was with The Fad and Joystick at Kung Fu Necktie.
Yeah.
So it was like a pretty decent, good show. Yeah. And I'm like, we have to do this, by the way. And he's like, all right, fine. Like, the only reason he didn't want to be in the band was because he was in like five other bands.
Right, right.
And like, you know, like every other good drummer is in like 10 fucking bands. I'm sure you know.
Yeah. I got a couple, two, three, you know?
Yeah. And yeah, eventually we just like, he did the show and then we just kept getting more show offers and like a bunch. And then like our label, Bad Time Records, started like at the exact same time that Catboy did.
Oh, okay.
And the owner, Mike Szczynski, he was in this band. He is in this band, Kill Lincoln. Which is like awesome, like ska punk band, and like I've known him for years, like from the Snails, and like he hit us up. He's like, "Yo, I'm starting a label. Do you want to be the first like band on our label?" And I'm like, "Okay," because we just started. I'm like, "Fuck yeah! All right, we already got an offer to do something." And like he's like, "Yeah, I'll press your first record." Wow. And I'm like, "Okay,
it's awesome."
And yeah, like it was just kind of a bunch of it was just weird.
So you're in the same position. You're like, okay, we need songs.
Exactly. Yeah. Then we recorded our first record. Like,
that's how we work best.
We recorded our demos in like May of 2018, and then we recorded the record in. It was like the very first week of 2019 in January.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, because we literally moved the same week that we recorded the whole record. Mm-hmm. Britt and I were like moving, so we were like moving at night and recording the record by day.
That doesn't sound stressful.
Yeah, in the middle of like New Year's Eve and turned out good though.
That's awesome.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
In the last couple of weeks, I've learned a lot about your scene, you know, and the Bad Time Records and Kill Lincoln and all the other bands on there. And it seems like there's this really, you know, cool, vibrant thing going on. And, you know, it always seems to me from the outside that the ska community is always, it seems tight knit. And kind of when one band is doing well, the other bands are stoked and it doesn't seem as maybe competitive and maybe a little more uplifting. Have you felt that, or do you feel that from the ska scene, and have any elders of the scene reached out to you?
Yeah,
it definitely feels like a community of friends that like just want to see you succeed,
right?
Which is really cool because like that's how I feel like when I see my friends doing things that they love and you know putting out things that they're really proud of. It makes me feel good and like happy to see that. So I'm like, let me share this shit. I want other people to see this too.
Yeah.
So I feel like it, you know, I don't know if Bad Time Records was like specifically the thing that
it definitely like spearheaded the whole, because like me, like being in the ska scene for like about 10 years at this point, like, or even longer at this point, like it didn't really have that feel. Back when I was doing it at first, it was kind of like each band had every its own little thing. It was, yeah, it was like every man has it for himself. But like, we were also like in the more like traditional realm of ska with my old band, The Snails. Like we, that was another thing. Like my bandmates kind of like looked down upon bands like Kill Lincoln or like ska punk bands, 'cause it was like, they're not, you know, where they're not traditional.
Oh,
they're
right,
not,
right.
They're not respecting the genre.
There's a pecking order there.
Exactly.
Some.
Yeah. And then like, so then we were kind of just like always playing with bands more on the traditional side, like, you know, like the Slackers and like,
right.
But then like through that, like I've gotten like all these amazing relationships with all these bands from all across the country, which has definitely been beneficial to Catboy. 'Cause like I've just met so many people from just touring constantly and like meeting people of all different scenes and stuff. But like, I don't know, in the past, like since Bad Time Records like started like 3 years ago or whatever, it's just been like the main thing about Bad Time is just like getting bands that are like cool, like good, but like also just like all about the scene and like just like another band gets signed, it puts out their record on Bad Time Records. It's like every band on the label or like associated starts like hyping up that band and like doing everything we can to get like our fans onto them.
Yeah.
And it's just been like that nonstop since like pretty much the inception of Catbite. And like, it just seems like this scene has just become so like wholesome, and like such a community rather than like what I've been dealing with, like what I've noticed in the past, like,
yeah,
you know, 10 years.
Yeah.
And it, it's,
there's definitely still some like clickiness in the scene, I think,
sure.
with more like of the traditional, you know, ska bands, which, you know, sucks. 'Cause like we're friends with lots of bands that are just, you know, that type of, that style of ska.
So what, like, I mean, out of my personal, like what's the line in the sand? From what people would deem a traditional ska band to a like next generation ska band, is it distorting the guitars? Is it getting away from like, you know, the kick on the one or like something like what are the things that actually separate those two? Really,
I think it's really just association, like who you associate with, which is fucking lame.
So it's even less about music.
It's
right.
Yeah, it's I mean, it definitely has a lot to do that would do with that. Like there's bands that are like, you know, mostly pop punk with horns, but like some some things of ska, but like they're taking that from their influences, which are bands like that in the third wave of quote third wave of ska, like a lot of the bands were popular in the 90s and then bringing their own influences, but there's still like that ska like influence and like that's totally fine if they're like if they call themselves ska band, like because they're still pulling from ska influences. And then you know, it's just, I don't know, it's just so corny. And then
is
like
it
you
the
have
suits, is it the suits? Is that what it is? If
it's
you're not wearing
suits.
A suit,
yeah,
you're not
ska.
Traditional. Yeah,
yeah, probably. Yeah, I don't know, it's all corny. We like, because I mean, like personally, like that was like the first shit I got into was like I like listened to, I like got a mixtape of or mix CD from my friend who was the singer of the Snails in high school. And it was the first half was like at like 10 Agrolite songs. And then the second half was like 10 Operation Ivy songs.
Okay. Yeah.
And I just like listened to this CD like nonstop. I'm like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
And we
yeah.
like me and Todd, who gave it to me, just like went down the wormhole and like went through like Hellcat Records and like got all that, and then got into like the Clash, and then immediately just like gravitated towards like Trojan Records and like the 1960s like Jamaican shit. And that's kind of where I like lived full time for like years, just because I just kind of like got that like mentality, like traditional shit's better. And then like it only took until like the past couple years when I've really like branched out beyond like two-tone and traditional shit, where I'm like learning about a lot more of like third wave stuff. And I'm like, this shit is so fucking good because they're pulling from this influence. And that's like exactly what we're doing with Catbite.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we're pulling from, you know, traditional ska. We're playing, pulling from Two-Tone, we're pulling from Third Wave, we're also pulling from power pop and soul and R&B and jazz, and like it's all it is. It's just whoever your influences are, and it's just silly to like talk shit on a band because you don't share the same influences.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like ska has, you know, it's been around so long that now it has all the, you know, it has the different branches that every other fucking genre has. Like, it didn't have that before, you know? Like, I mean, I don't even think, like, it, you know, Op Ivy was like, even, you know, that may be the first band that anybody used the name ska punk for.
And I had no idea I was listening to ska when I was listening to Operation Ivy.
Yeah.
Like, right. I was just skating, listening to Op Ivy, and I had no idea it was, had anything to do with ska, really.
But you didn't have all the, like, the offshoots, you know? You didn't have, it was all ska, or else it wasn't ska.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
You know, it was like, that was kind of all or nothing, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Because, I mean, those bands were, like, taking that shit, like, Les and Jake was taking that shit in the 90s.
Yeah.
You know, where they're all, like, I was like, wait, fucking people aren't over this yet, you know? Like, this is a long time ago. They're a big group. Maybe you heard of them, you know?
Yeah.
But nice. I guess if any music, I mean, you think about it, how many generations does music have to live where you just can't define it like that anymore? Because I feel like hip-hop's at that point now, too. Like, try to find me a distinction between Run DMC and like Lil Uzi Vert or something. You know, it's like two different kinds of music, really.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Well, I was wondering about the lyrical inspiration for these songs, because you know, some of it's pretty heavy, like punchy stuff, and I was wondering, do you feel you can or should go a little darker with the lyrical content because of the brightness of the music? Is it like a ward more of an opportunity to almost go that route, or like what's the vibe behind that?
I mean, I think for me, like when I write, I tend to write kind of like more like, I guess you could say like love songs or like, you know, anti-love songs, like breakup songs. I don't know.
Sad feeling songs.
Yeah. Still like, a love song.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah. So that's kind of just like, I don't know what I tend to write when I do write songs. But I don't know. I personally love when like a song is like upbeat and you're like, and then you're singing along and it's like, you know, I'm so sad, but I'm dancing.
Yeah.
You know, I really enjoy that. So I kind of like that song. Some of our songs are like that.
I mean, most of our songs, I mean, like every song I've written, I write when I'm depressed. Like that, I can't write a song when I cannot write a song when I'm happy. Like, it's I'm like super depressed. Fucking crank shit out. And like, same with you. Like,
you can, but it's just, there's something hits different when you're sad.
That's the type of songs we all like in this band gravitate to. It's like that, like, you know, because like, I don't know, it's relatable song. Like, we just kind of, I don't know, at least like with like a lot of the songs I write, so we're probably like, you probably write like 60-70% of lyrics, and I'm like maybe 40%. And it's like, we write a lot of shit like together and stuff, but it's always just kind of like, you know, sad, depressing shit. And then we're like, let's make this as poppy as possible now. Yeah. Just cause like, I don't know, that's the shit we like to hear. Like bands like fucking Jeff Rosenstock, like one of, you know, he does a phenomenal job at doing that. And it's just,
yeah, I mean, it's just
he does do a great job doing that.
Things that, like, you know, things that we've experienced in life, I guess, it's a lot easier to write about that than to, like, kind of make something up. Although some of the, you know, like, a lot, the songs that we write, too, will be, like, based on, like, an experience, but, you know, fluffed up a little bit for the songwriting purpose. Mm-hmm. But,
sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, most of the songs are, like, you know, true events, just like, you know, fictionalized and wild. And like, that's just kind of always been our songwriting, like since the beginning of Cat Bite. And like a lot of like a handful of these songs are like some of the very first songs I've ever written in my life, like way pre Catbite, which is actually the way, the reason we got the name Catbite. When I was in this band, The Snails, I was never writing any of the music in that band because I just felt like an idiot and like couldn't contribute basically. Right. It's like, you know, I like learned to play guitar when I was 18 to be in this band.
Yeah.
And like sure. never like just like played music for myself. I was just like in this band.
Wasn't really like, an open environment for that.
Yeah. But like I like in secret just like started writing music for myself at like, I don't know, maybe like 6 years ago or something like that.
Oh, okay.
And like for the first time, and like I like really got into like bands like Joyce Manor and like shit like that. And I'm like, I can write shit like this. This is how I feel. Even though it wasn't like ska at all, even though like ska was like my main thing, I just was really into bands like that. And I started writing a fuck ton of music like that. And whenever I would make a demo, I would just like save it in my iTunes as Catbite.
Mm.
And like that was just like the folder I had. I don't know where I came up with the name. I just thought it sounded cool. And like, I just like always wanted to start a band one day, like when I was confident enough to like bring these songs out and call it Catbite.
Yeah, sure.
And like, so like the first, when we first started writing songs for the first record, it was like, I brought like a couple of the songs from Catbite, mm-hmm. but the Catbite folder, and then Britt did a lot. And it was just like, oh, they work really well together. It's kind of like same theme. And it's just kind of like, that's always how it's been. Just mm-hmm. like, just sad. Sad songs,
yeah,
super poppy.
But it's cool. I mean, you know, I think the thing I probably like the most about, I don't know what we call it, whether it's like the post-punk scene or whatever,
mm-hmm.
You know, Jeff and Joyce Manor or Pup, like bands like that, I've never been a poetry fan. So I appreciate how real and honest and straight the messaging is in those songs and kind of
yeah.
how
yeah.
raw they are emotionally. Like mm-hmm. kind of telling stories in a way that's not, that I don't find like whiny or complaining,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
it's just like, hey, this is my experience right now. And it's very transparent. I like that about that scene. And that it's interesting you mentioned that because I can see that lyrically
yeah.
with you all, but just with a, you know, kind of different sort of music.
Yeah. I feel like, I'm like intimidated. I'm not like, I've never been a lyrics person. Like I usually, when I listen to music, I listen to the music and then it takes a while for me to like actually like gravitate towards the lyrics. Mm-hmm. But then you have bands like Joyce Manor or Jeff Rosenstock and shit where it's not intimidating at all. It's just like, here's the message of the song. And mm-hmm. I'm not like trying to like search for the meaning. And
yeah,
like,
I don't want to have to spend like 10 minutes trying to figure out what the fucking song means.
Yeah.
Me too. I hate that shit.
Yeah, which, like if that's what you do, that's cool. But like, it's just not my style, and like,
no.
it's just easier. It's more accessible to people, and like, especially if you can put a cool pop beat to it.
Yeah, yeah, and get so, a hook in there. For sure.
Yeah, I mean, I there are bands that do that I do enjoy, but mm-hmm. it's definitely not like I can't write that way. Mm-hmm. Like even if I tried, I just
oh totally.
Yeah,
and if I do, I'm making shit up. I'm just putting words together.
Yeah, I like the extremes. Like, if you're going to go the other way, I want, like, Led Zeppelin. I want, yeah. like, Valhalla, I'll be your underlord. Like, just
yeah.
ridiculous
yeah.
fantasy.
You yeah. know?
By the way, I did, I texted Jeff Rosenstock prior to this interview to see if I could get any dirt. Or I was like, give me, like, the best ska question there is. But then I realized the last time I texted Jeff, was getting ready for the Mike Park interview. So I was like, oh shit, that's fucked up. That's the only time I'm hitting him up.
It's the only time you talk.
Yeah. Like, but Jeff is a big fan of your band. He told me that.
Awesome.
He says, he told me verbatim, I like about three bands and they're one of them.
So, what? Yes. Holy shit.
So he got some love from old Rosenstock.
That's
the
so
hell?
Fucking cool.
That's
I wonder if, you know, this is a curious thing. I'm curious if Jeff listens to Going Off Track. Let's see. We're an hour into an interview. This would be great. I'm going to call Jeff out one way or the other with this. So can I get into something fun with y'all? Because,
yeah.
You know, out of curiosity, you were just talking about, you know, naming the band Catbite and how it randomly came.
Yeah.
And I was curious, so I Googled, got into cat bites a little, you know, just the actual, I'm like, cats bite people? Like, I knew about clawing, you know, and cat scratch, cat scratch fever.
Yeah.
And I've seen cats like nibble, you know, I've had cat nibble on my finger and stuff, but I've never seen like a cat like chomp someone out.
Oh,
like,
yeah. It's bad.
So I did.
Some cats are fucking scared.
Yeah. So listen to this. I get into some research and, you know, yeah, apparently they can inject bacteria deep into your joints and tissue. And one in three patients with such wounds has to be hospitalized.
Yeah.
Two thirds of those hospitalized need surgery.
Jesus. Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
Cats are so assholes.
The explanation, in the report said that dogs' teeth are blunter, so they don't tend to penetrate as deeply and they tend to leave a larger wound. The cat's teeth are sharp, penetrate deeply, and they seed bacteria in the joint and tendon sheaths.
Oh my Jesus God.
Christ. Yeah. So they did this one study going from like January 09 to 11 of 190 something people who were, had bad cat bites. 57 were hospitalized.
Oh my God.
They were in hospital for 3 days. Of those hospitalized, 38 needed to have their wounds surgically irrigated. And 8 patients needed more than one operation. Some needed reconstructive surgery.
Holy shit.
From cat bites.
Yeah. Oh,
wow.
So look at this. You didn't know you chose a fucking, like, it sounds metal. Cute. Yeah. This is kind of fucking badass.
Yeah.
Metal.
Yeah, metal. Yes. Yeah.
And that's what you get when you Google our name, man.
Yeah.
So you start getting infections.
Try and find our website, and then you get just all this gnarly information.
Oh, I've learned from the Google. If you want to find you on there, you write cat bite band.
Yeah, exactly. You got to put those quotations on the Google search.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, pretty gnarly, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Man, have you ever had an incident with a cat? Are you cat people?
We have three cats.
Oh, you do?
We do. Yeah. We have three cats and a dog.
Man. Oh, jeez.
But they're all great.
Fortunately, I've never had a cat attack before with any, because I've had like animals growing up all my life.
Okay.
We've always had at least a cat and a dog.
Anything else? Other things?
Yeah, me and my brother had a ferret. We had a rabbit. We had, we had fish. We had a parrot. We've had,
she's still going,
lots of like, you know, dogs that, well, my dad, for whatever reason, my mom used to say it was because he smelled like butterscotch, but he would just like come home and like these dogs would like random dogs that were just like lost would follow him home.
Oh my God.
And he would like bring them in the house. So
did your father actually smell like butterscotch? Like to you?
I mean, I didn't think so, but
Was he a Werther's eater or something?
No. Ah, Werther's.
I love Werther's though. Yeah. But
I don't think he was old enough to have Werther's. No, you need like to be like 65.
Yeah.
And then you get the Werther's.
The Werther's smell.
Excuse me, Tim. I have partaken in many Werther's in my life.
No, I mean, I've had them many times, but like once you're 65, a jar of them appears on your coffee table.
Oh, yeah. They just show up at your house.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I love them.
Always, you reach into your pockets, never ending.
And there's always Werther's. And you have like the weird like red ceramic jar on the coffee table. And there's always like 40 Werther's in there.
Yeah, and a couple watermelon suckers.
Exactly.
They're like tossed in for no reason.
Yeah, I love those when they get chewy.
Yeah, I was wondering, when you were talking animals and Fort Lauderdale, I was like, oh shit, maybe they kept like crocs.
Oh yeah, we had a fucking iguana. My dad lassoed one off the street.
Whoa! Lassoed an iguana?
Yeah, he
come on now.
Yeah.
Her dad was fucking
Florida shit, yeah.
Wait, you got it. I just need to know. Did you see him lasso an iguana?
Yeah, we were like playing out just like on the street, and one just like came up on the street, and my brother and I were like, can we catch it?
He had a lasso on hand.
He had I think he just had like rope. He just had rope, and he like fashioned it into a lasso.
Yeah, that makes
sense.
And
he caught it, and then we kept it. We had like a giant fish tank that we didn't have any fish in anymore. And we just kept it in there and we fed it lettuce. And
Jesus fucking Christ.
We had it for a while. Do you remember it?
Did you name it?
I don't know if we actually named it or not. It was just the guy that was in the tank.
That's awesome. Well, yeah.
Oh, God.
That's. Did you grow up like out of the city? Like kind of with some land and stuff?
I mean, just like Florida is really mass. Like it's just, it's all kind of like suburban, even this, you know, even the city, but we never lived like in like a downtown area. So yeah, I guess it was more like suburban-y, like grassy areas around, but I mean, there's just like iguanas and alligators and shit everywhere.
Yeah. Florida, so you're right next to Alligator Alley down there, right?
Yeah.
Shit's
so great.
I love that.
You know, the first record label meeting I ever had in my life was in Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
Oh my gosh, really?
Randomly. I got taken to an El Pollo Loco.
Oh, yeah.
And shit. I'm a vegetarian, so all I had was plantains. And motherfucker didn't even pay for it.
What?
Yeah. I was like, this is my entry into the music business, was meeting Eulogy Records. And he didn't pay for my plantains.
Jesus.
I was disappointed. I thought I was finally like, made it. I'm like, all right, like, I'm gonna get a large something instead of a medium,
and then they don't pay for it.
I was like, "Yo, fuck that!" Probably
the least he could do.
And that's why you didn't sign with them, right?
Yeah.
No, we did sign with them. We were. I mean, this is like '97. I wasn't really pushing offers away, you know.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Someone had a couple hundred dollars to give you. Like, I'll pay for the plantains. You know.
Oh my god,
that's true.
But anyway, so I noticed Britt in one of the, I don't know, another interview or something. I know you did that Selena cover, which is awesome. And thanks. But you mentioned you were hoping it kind of bridged the gap between the U.S. ska scene and like the South American ska scene.
Yeah.
What's the vibe with the South American ska scene? Like, what countries and what bands? What's kind of popping off down there?
I mean, Mexico is like huge for ska.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's massive.
People are crazy. Bands down there are playing to like stadiums full of people.
Whoa!
It's fucking huge.
So they're like hits? Are they like radio songs or just
down there? Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, there's like this band, Inspector.
Uh-huh.
They're like one of the biggest ska bands in Mexico. And like, they'll draw like 20,000 people a show.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Like one of my old bandmate that, played in the Snails, he played keys for us. He would tour with that band Bad Manners. Like the, you know, the two-tone band. Uh-huh. And he did a Mexico and South America tour. And like, so in the US, Bad Manners will draw about 50 people, like no fucking joke.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
We opened for them once in like Westchester, Pennsylvania, and there was 50 people at the Note.
Crazy.
But they played a show. It was just like a 3-band bill in Mexico City, and there was like 30,000 people there.
Oh my goodness.
Then they would just get on little flights and just hop to like different cities all across like South America. And it was like a 2-week tour. And like, yeah, like the average crowd size was just like, you know, at least 2,000, but like, wow, up to like fucking 20,000 people. And like, that's just like the ska scene in Mexico and South America. And
so cool.
But like, there, it's like none of these bands like are like breaking out of like Mexico and like into the US scene just because they're speaking Spanish.
Yeah, I think it's just because don't understand. And like, yeah, I mean, obviously it makes it easier if you can listen to a song and understand what, you know, they're saying in the song, but also like we have Google now, like you can just copy and paste that shit into Google and now you know what it says. Like it's really not that hard. If you like the music and you're like grooving and you really enjoy it, like what is making it so difficult to like support, you know, this band just because they're not from your country, you know?
Totally.
Yeah. It's weird. It's weird to me that it's there's such a difference.
You would think just anything with a good enough hook should be able to make it over, right?
Yeah.
But there's so few examples of like an American or British audience like taking anything that's not in English. There's like so few examples.
Exactly.
99 Luft balloons.
That might be the only
Rammstein, Du Hast.
That's a fucking hit.
You know, was Macarena in English at all?
No, it's in Spanish.
Yeah, that's all Spanish,
right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the biggest Spanish crossover hit so far? Is the Macarena?
Well, there's like Living La Vida Loca.
But that's just the hook.
Yeah, he just sings the rest in English.
But that's like, that's kind of like what we're kind of going for is like, and like, I mean, he's.
Be Ricky Martin.
Yeah, we just want to, so the whole thing is we want to be, we want to be Ricky Martin, but like he's become like, he had become like an American pop star.
Right.
And like, and then he releases a song, which it's not the whole thing in Spanish, but just like a fucking hook is in Spanish. And like, just that alone might just like, you know, like allow some people to kind of open their eyes a little bit and like be like, oh, there, you can sing in Spanish. Like that's a thing you can do. And like, that's kind of like, what our like idea was with singing Bidi Bidi Bum Bum, because it's like the verse is like, I have no idea what the fuck she's saying because I don't speak Spanish, but like the hook, like the chorus, I can sing that because it's just, it's a hook and it's like singable and like
it's literally just like noise. Basically.
It's it's not even like actual Spanish. It's just like, but yeah, like that was kind of the, like,
we did put the English translation though for,
on the line and the with like a poster on the inside, and it has like the literal
lyrics. Yeah, it has the lyrics for all the songs, but I wanted to put the English translation in there for people.
That's cool. Do you plan on trying to write any songs or verses or anything in Spanish in the future?
That would be pretty cool. I like definitely have pretty much lost all like my Spanish. I mean, I can still sing in Spanish because like I can learn a song. You know,
right.
But like when I was younger, I definitely could speak a little bit, and I could read and write and understand it pretty well. But like I've kind of all but lost that just because like I don't have any, you know, I don't have anyone speaking to me in Spanish to have a conversation with. So, but yeah, maybe. I mean, that would be. I think that would be sick.
Stuck in a house with Tim from Lancaster over here. You know.
Yeah.
White as hell.
Yeah. Grassiest.
Grass, yes. Oh God.
This is why he has tricks for boxed mac and cheese.
Yeah, exactly.
Wait, did anyone, I don't know why I have this in hyphens on my notes, but I think it was just because I was impressed I thought of it. Did anyone ever call Lancaster Skankcaster?
Oh shit.
I don't No.
That, oh my God! How are you in a ska band from Lancaster, and this never happened?
Skankcaster. Wait, that's so good.
That's mine. I'm taking it.
All right, we're gonna play Lancaster one day, and it's gonna just be called Skankcaster.
We'll talk. We'll talk about this when we play together. We're playing together soon. It's gonna be fun.
Yeah.
I'm so excited. We saw you at the Laura Jane Grace show.
Yeah.
Nice.
Underground Arts.
Yeah.
It was so much fun. And Control Top.
Yeah.
Yes.
Love that band so much.
Great
that
group.
Such an awesome tour. Yeah,
it's gonna be a fun night and a diverse lineup as you all requested.
Yeah.
You like playing on weird lineups. Do you know who's in Zopa?
Found out last night.
You found out last night.
Yeah. Our drummer, Chris? Chris texted us because like what's his name? Michael
Imperioli.
Yeah.
So he posted about the show too early.
Yeah.
He posted about last night. And then
Jared was on text. He's like, not supposed to happen yet. Come on.
But then like, so our drummer Chris, he's in Las Vegas right now. He plays with a Star Trek themed rock and roll band. And
God, that's awesome.
They're playing like this 10-day Star Trek like Comic-Con shit in Vegas. Like he's literally playing while like George Takei walks out.
He's like, they're like the house band.
They're the house band for this massive
thing. They're walking
thing.
Out George Takei, and they're playing the walking music for Kelsey Grammer's there.
What? Yeah. Does he wear a Star Trek costume while he plays?
Yeah.
Oh man.
And he hates it because he doesn't like Star Trek at all, but it's hilarious because I have a bunch of pictures. bunch of pictures of him.
Yeah, you got to blow up the Instagram on him when he does those shows.
Yeah.
But he like texted us last night and he was like, holy fucking shit, we're playing with Michael. I'm like, I have no idea who that is.
He's like, Christopher from The Sopranos. And like, we have
I've never seen that yet.
Sopranos. But, oh, okay.
And then our bass player, Ben, is just like freaking out. And like his partner, like freaking out. And I'm just like,
Maybe we gotta watch The Sopranos.
Yeah, I guess we gotta watch The Sopranos.
Yeah, at least you gotta at least watch a couple episodes for a frame of reference, you know?
Yeah. But we like posted the flyer today, and like everyone's like freaking out, and like, you gotta ask him if you like ska.
Yeah,
and I'm like, all right, so I'll ask him. I'll get it on camera. Like, do you like ska? And
I know I watch a lot of Sopranos, so my big challenge here is to treat him as Michael Imperioli and not Christopher Moltisanti, because that's what I want to treat him. Like, I want to call him Chrissy.
Yeah,
and you know, and like ask him if he like. Like, oh, are you off the heroin now, Chrissy? Like you know, I got to remember there's a man behind that. It's hard for me to see like that.
It's so funny.
And then also playing Fest, right, with Eve Six.
That's so fucking crazy.
What the fuck is going on with that? I can't tell if that's a joke or it's real.
I don't know. Did you listen to the new EP that they put out?
I didn't. No.
It's there's this one song called like I Wanna Bite You in the Face or something. It's really fucking good.
Wow.
Yeah, like the whole it's like a 5-song EP that they put out like a month ago. And it's great.
So we're pro Eve Six now.
Yeah, just because of how
they got hold of the way that Twitter works and they're going with it. They're all in now.
Yeah, they're kind of like fucking with themselves and it's sort of panning out, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and then it turns out that they like release a really good EP and it's just like...
Yeah.
You know,
I was like, cool.
You know, my automatic thing would be like, to be like, whoa, whatever, Eve Six. But then it's like, if you think about it, their hit was what?
Part of the Blender.
Yeah, but like 25 years ago, whatever the fuck that song was.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know. I kind of have respect for a one-hit wonder type band who actually like just keep going and putting out records when they're like way smaller than they used to be.
Yeah.
Because that shows some like, you know, legitimacy to their craft, right? A little bit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
well, yeah, absolutely. They're like, we had this one-hit wonder, but we still like to make music and here we are.
Yeah, and they like owned it. Like, he was just like, yeah, I'm the Hard in the Blender guy. And like that was like their thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And like they just like accepted it. And then it's just like, all right, well, by the way, here's this new EP. And like everyone just kind of like felt, I don't know, I felt like, even though I've never met him, I'm like, I feel like I'm friends with this guy. Because we've had like two or three like Twitter.
Some exchanges.
Exchanges. At one point, someone asked him if he likes ska. And then he was like, he said, it's too happy for me. I only like depressed music. And I like commented, and I'm like, hey, you would love us. Our music is fucking depressed as fuck.
Nice.
Some shit like that. And then like I posted a video of like one of our songs from our first record. It was like a couple months ago.
Uh-huh.
And then he was just like, oh shit, I actually really like this. And then like retweeted it. And it was like, oh, cool.
Oh, man.
So now I feel like we're best friends.
Yeah, pretty much.
We had that one interaction.
Can't wait to meet him.
But like, and then like, he just kind of seems like a nice guy.
That's so
like,
funny.
It's just doing it for fun. And then, yeah, it just so happens that this like small, little EP that they put out is actually like pretty good.
Are they still? So I was always mad at that group and that scene for kind of mainstreaming the Everclear drum beat.
Yeah.
Which I never thought never thought it should have gotten footing in the rock world. I still don't like it.
Yeah.
Are they still doing it? On the new EP? Is it still got the Everclear, like, white hop beat?
It feels like less of that. It feels, it's way more, like, fuzzy. Like, I don't know. It's hard to describe. It's not as, like, clean cut like that.
One of them hit their 40s and started taking edibles or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, got a fuzz pedal. Uh-huh.
Listen to Not a Surf for the first time.
Yeah, there's a little bit more open hi hat. it's pretty cool.
It's cool. All right. Well, I'll be honest with you. I'm not gonna listen to it. I'd like to be diplomatic at the end of this interview and say, oh, I'll check it out.
No, I'm
just going to listen to more Dinosaur Jr. and just keep going with my night, you know?
That's fair.
Yeah, no, I was folding laundry one time and I saw Twitter. I'm like, all right, let me put it on. I'm like, oh, this is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And that was the only time I listened to it, but it made folding laundry a little bit better.
Tim, stay positive. Don't be like me. You know? Don't be like me. Well, that was fun. It was nice to meet you too.
Yeah,
oh my gosh, I can't wait to play our show.
Yeah, we're gonna play a show. We're gonna high five and know each other in real life.
I know.
Yeah.
Sometimes I joke with Brad about this. Sometimes when I do these interviews, between booking and talking to someone for a couple hours, I sort of feel a little familiar at the end.
Yeah.
It's sometimes a little too familiar where I think I freak people out after. And now I actually have the potential to be your real friends.
Yay! So,
Can't wait.
It'll be fun. Heads up, the white pizza at Crossroads is very good. It's my favorite thing to eat, and you get a free meal when you go there.
Hell yeah.
So, I actually played there once,
me too.
6 years ago, I played there, and it was with King Django.
Oh, you know, King? Yeah.
Yeah, it was a terrible show. Because we were his backing band. The Snails was his backing band for a couple years. But it was the Snails and King Django, and there was six people there.
Yeah.
But the venue was awesome, so I'm very excited.
It's crazy to me. As someone from Jersey, I didn't even know Garwood was a place.
Yeah.
You know what a fake place.
It kind of is. It's one of those towns that doesn't even have their own cops. They're a municipality of something else, one of those towns. So it's amazing to me that I just see show listings sometimes. It's oh, this band and this band coming to Garwood. I'm it's just bizarre. but it's going to be fun. Thanks for taking the time to do the interview with us. That was awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you so
and
much.
The record is great. I've been listening to it all the time.
Thank you so much.
My favorite song is Scratch Me Up.
Oh, hell yeah.
That is a jam. And I love the vibe on it. That's one of the ones that felt kind of 50s to me, especially in the guitar and the melody. So really hell cool. Yeah. I dug it.
Thank you.
So everyone have a great night and we'll see each other soon.
All right.
See ya.
Right. Bye.
Peace.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Right. Good job, Benny. Good job.
Thank you. I think if I don't see a band named Skankcaster from Lancaster soon, I'm going to be super upset.
I was thinking I couldn't think. I don't think there are any other big ska bands from Philly, right? I couldn't think of any bands that I knew from historically.
Sure. So what's the funniest? I think ska bands because of the, you know, putting the ska thing Skankcaster into a word. There was a band when I was growing up called the Ska Skank Redemption.
Right.
Which is great.
It's like Thai restaurants, dude. Every Thai restaurant is a pun, and every ska band, they feel if we're going to be taken seriously, our name has to be a pun, right? Scottalites. Remember Scottalites?
Scottalites. Now, I can't remember if this was a joke or not, but I remember Osama Bin Laden.
Yes, exactly.
Is that a real band?
Yeah.
They were a real band. Okay. Yeah. It's a great name. I mean, it's so funny.
It's totally like Thai food, dude.
Ska's like Thai food. Spicy, fun, creamy. Another thing that has nothing to do with ska or cat bite. I was watching Paw Patrol earlier. You know that children's show?
Yeah.
With the cartoons and the dogs.
My kids used to watch it, yeah.
And I was like half into an episode and I realized I was watching like Blue Lives Matter porn, basically.
What? Really?
It is. Yeah, I didn't realize that Paw Patrol is Blue Lives Matter porn. Okay. They have this like general, this human general, and then there's like six dogs who seemingly are not paid and are kind of like these sort of like autonomous, you know, will take any order. They don't care, you know, what's going on.
Right. I can't remember the show, but I know my kids.
You know, they throw
it.
The uniforms on and the cool trucks and cars. And I'm like, oh, I would not be surprised if there was like, you know, the PBA, some unions or something were throwing Paw Patrol a little dough, you know, at this point.
Get it in the mix early.
Let's say the voice actors are definitely getting PBA cards, you know.
We'll have to look into this, Benny.
Listen, there's a thing. There's got to be a thing. But Cat Bite was a lot of fun to talk to. Tim and Britt.
Refreshing young band.
Very refreshing. I actually get to hang out with these two in October.
I saw that.
Playing a show together.
You want to hype it? Where is it? When is it?
Oh, it's... What's the actual date? I don't know. Let me look it up. I'm the worst. But it's at a Crossroads Club in New Jersey, Garwood, New Jersey. And it's with Mercy Union, our first show back in a long time. It's with Cat Bite. And it's with Zopa, who is the... it's October 15th. I just Googled it.
There you go. Nice.
And it's with Zopa, who is Michael Imperioli's band. From,
oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know he had a band.
Yes.
Holy shit.
Yes. So,
oh my God.
He's Michael, Jared, you know, the singer of Mercy Union is now his label owner because he pressed the vinyl for Zopa. And now we're doing gigs with Chrissy. I tell you, this came up, I think, when you were gone off the interview, which we should tell the people.
Yeah, I disappeared. I ducked out, if you can't tell.
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge for me is going to be like not calling him Chrissy, you know, like not treating him like he's an actual, you know.
Dude, you should bro him down and get him on the show. I mean, he's a friend of Jesse's. I met him at a party, one of Jesse's parties. Like, I think it might have been his birthday party at Michael's restaurant in the West Village.
Yeah, you want to talk to Christopher Moltisanti?
Yeah, man. He had, you know what? They had on his drink, but this is, I think I said this before, but on the end of his drink menu, the last drink on his drink menu was go back to Long Island iced tea.
Yeah. I like that.
So, bring that up. You got some there. I gave you some talking points.
No, I would love to get him on.
Yeah, man.
But his band is cool too. It's kind of like a 70s. You know, New York club rock kind of band, you know?
I have no idea. I'll have to check that out.
So, interesting gig, you know?
Yeah, check
it out. Mercy Union and Zopa and Cat Bite. It's going to be fun. You think I should skank?
Yes, go for it.
I don't know if I've ever skanked.
I bet you could do it. I bet you'd be good at it.
I'm just going to show up with like the whole gear. I'm going to get a flat cap, suspenders, bunch of checkered stuff. And just feel out the crowd, like see if they accept me as one of their own or if someone calls me a poser or not, you know?
You should totally skank. You're not going to believe this, Benny.
Yeah.
But I swear to God, I'm telling the truth. I'm going to cut this outro short because our order just came from One More Tie.
Wait, what?
We ordered dinner from One More Tie.
you actually got Thai food coming. Yes. How ironic. That is funny. What did you get?
I got curry. I got massam and curry.
Ooh, nice and spicy?
Yeah, it is. It's really good.
You going to have an IPA with it?
I am, yes. I'm going to have a Five Boroughs IPA.
Frosty cold IPA. Well, you have fun, guy.
But listen,
best of the family. Do you got some socials for Catbite?
Yeah, Catbite Band everywhere that you get your social media, Instagram, Twitter. Check out Catbite Band. Go there, and you know, I'm sure that they'll be propping the show in October.
Yeah,
and, you know, obviously you can catch up with us at Going Off Track everywhere, and Patreon.com/Going Off Track if you want to get a little more involved. Become a patron, get a little few extra perks, and you know, leave us a review on iTunes. Just a regular review telling us, you know, a healthy review about how you like. How you like the show, you know, with lots of stars.
It's funny how you have food waiting and all of a sudden you become fucking Dan Rather. I'm going to send a meal out to you every time we got to do this. All right. Thank you, everyone. Have a great week, and we'll see you soon.